Wake, Rattle, and Roll. It's every Saturday morning.
And now, 3, 2,
good morning. I'm Adam Fair.
And I'm Dusty Griffin. And Adam, mm-hmm. You know, I've been thinking a lot about cartoons today. And
that's good.
You know, I really honestly feel like they're maybe possibly the purest form of art.
That's
or,
true.
You know, that yeah, the most true. Natural, you know, like speaks to our soul type of thing.
Oh,
like
definitely.
A, embodies definitely. The human condition, I would say.
Yeah.
And anybody that creates this kind of stuff, I mean, I hold them in high regard.
That's true. Having said that, let's pick apart the schedule and make fun of these bad shows. We're still in 1988, and this time we're looking at CBS. Let's see what CBS was grooving to. And they're,
The eye. We're looking at the eye, folks. We're looking into the all-seeing eye.
Big Brother's watching, kids! So this was, 1988. CBS is pretty cool. The hit songs at the time were Bobby McFerrin with Don't Worry, Be Happy, Phil Collins' Groovy Kind of Love, Robert Palmer's Simply Irresistible, George Michael's Faith, Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, and wow. Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror. That was that year.
Look, Larry, Daryl, and Daryl.
That was also that year on CBS. Look, is that old people dancing? Oh, wow, there's a Van Dyke. Murphy Brown.
I saw Vietnam. Is that China Beach or...
I forgot about China Beach.
What was the TV show? What was the other China Beach alternative?
The other China Beach?
Well, you know, there were two Vietnam shows at the same time. Like
Baywatch, I believe, was the other.
Yeah. No, it was Baywatch Nights. Yeah. Baywatch Mekong Nights.
For some reason, a lot of Chinese people would congregate there at night.
Mm-hmm. Made sense at the time.
So it's 8 a.m. in the morning. You know what I want to watch is The Adventures of Raggedy Ann. I bet. Now try. Don't forget to sing along with the classic theme song.
Lying is a sin.
Oh my god. Even the phone doesn't want to play it. It's so good. Hold on.
I can't wait.
I don't know why. Let's start that over. Here's the theme.
We can't see the people's heads.
Oh my god.
But that's not Nanny.
Is this a ripoff of another classical piece?
Dun, dun, dun.
Down, 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 down. Maybe I'm thinking of a Western.
Kissy Fur. That was Kissy
Fur. Oh god.
You were singing.
It's from the Paul Henning Hooterville trilogy.
There's that dumb camel.
I think the camel's the only redeeming quality on this show.
I can make a case for why the camel is the most original character on the show, but oh boy. I don't enjoy him.
What a great show. That was the theme to Raggedy Ann and Andy. A show that ran from 1988 to 1992, despite only being 13 episodes.
Wait, how many years is that?
Who lost a bet?
How many years is that? That's,
That's 5 years.
5 years and 13 episodes?
What happened?
Is it Squidbillies?
Put it on again. This was based, of course, on the 1915 doll, which I can't... No one seems to really have a real story. Like, what's her backstory? She's just a rag doll? Or you made her... Is she made of rags?
I told you, her owner died of the pox. And they had to get rid of...
The red pox?
Yeah, they had to get rid of Raggedy Ann.
Her nose fell off and left that triangle.
Mm-hmm. Gross.
I assume... That when a girl became a woman, you got a Raggedy Ann doll.
I don't know what you're trying to imply. I mean,
this is your new special friend.
You'll
this,
never mess her hair up.
Oh my god. It's your dabbing doll.
This oh is, god.
Previously, the Raggedy Gang have been seen in a series of Fleischer cartoons from the 40s. And of course, their horrific psychotropic 1977 musical adventure... Have you ever watched that thing?
No, I skipped it.
It's directed by Richard Williams, the guy who did Thief and the Cobbler, most of Roger Rabbit, and the Ziggy special. Ziggy's Gift, remember that?
Yes.
Where Ziggy just kind of looks around. He can't talk in that version.
Ziggy had one special. Farside had one special.
Yep. That's true. And Raggedy Ann and Andy, after that movie aired, Chuck Jones, in part of Chuck Jones, I guess he was trying to like restore any impossible property he could. He was like, I bet I could make that work. He did like Pogo. He did Raggedy Ann and Andy. He did all of the Rudyard Kipling stuff that was less fun with animals. Except Ricky Tikki Tavi. I think that's the best thing he ever did. It's weird as hell.
He fights a snake.
It's really, really bizarre. It's
incredible. I remember seeing it when I was a kid, but that's another show. But
so the two specials Chuck Jones did were The Great Santa Claus Caper.
Which, that, I saw.
Did you see that? How was that?
Did you see that? I shook my head like I was, you know.
Is it rocked?
No. It's awful. I'm not sure what year the Christmas Caper came out.
78.
Oh, yeah. Because I was going to say, it's clearly not the old Raggedy Ann and Andy, because the old Raggedy Ann and Andy, just like Beanie and Cecil, looks better, you know. Well,
just animated better within its limitations.
Better frame. Or actually, they packed in a ton of frames per second back then. Damn. Right? But I saw that damn movie, and it is definitely not that. it looks... Let me just tell everybody, I forced everybody in this house to watch Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Sweet.
As soon as I got home
from work. Turn it up.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Christmas special, they fight Wall-E Coyote.
Is that his name for real?
No.
But he looks exactly like Wile E. Coyote because Chuck Jones drew it. So, hey, I didn't really pay attention to where those classic late Chuck Jones, like, little eyelashes on everybody. Have you ever noticed that later Chuck Jones stuff? He kind of wants to cutify everybody with Cindy Lou Who eyelashes.
I'll pull it up. You know, the coyote wears goggles on his head, which I'm pretty sure Wile E. Coyote is.
At some point, sure. I mean, I saw the 79 special, The Pumpkin Who Couldn't Smile.
What?
And I was my mind was blown. So June Foray is Raggedy Ann in this one. So she sounds like Cindy Lou Who. And Raggedy Ann is Dawes Butler doing Elroy, pretty much. So he sounds kind of like this. Or Augie Doggy.
They couldn't fit Susan Blue in here?
We'll get to Susan Blue.
No!
So... So yeah, this is a slow and lazy animated show. It kind of has bad Rugrats music, like the bad version of it. There's no shadows. The person I watched it in said, "Oh, it's the Adventures of Raggedy Ann and Andy in the Land with Little Effort." I watched the episode The Sacred Cat Adventure, where the gang gathers outside to fill a hole. And they find a magic lamp with a genie who does like an Ed Wynn impression, but he's like, "Allah be praised." So he's like a Jewish Muslim. And then they're whirled away to a Temple of Doom where an Egyptian princess wants Raggedy Cat's flea collar.
Ooh, the cat. The cat is important in this one.
Great. Now, Raggedy Cat looks like Hellraiser. Like, okay, so what... Here's what the show's proposing. Like, oh man, Raggedy Cat's tail got ripped off, so there's just this red rope. It looks like his intestines are coming out of his asshole. Or he's shitting out of red vines.
Whoa.
Good design.
You know, and just, you know, if I might, I don't like the way his legs are all sewn on.
There's bad walking in this one. Like in the musical adventure and those Chuck Jones things, at least it kind of made use of their doll-like nature. This is just like maybe they were told to try less and that would result in something doll-like. Maybe it'll look like stop motion.
Yeah, you know, I think in the Christmas special they were just reusing old frames and animations. You know, and then they just didn't have anything for the foreground in the new one.
This show bummed me out. I liked that they were collectively called the Raggedies.
Yeah.
By whoever was chasing them. Or you could call them the Rag Rats. Because is this okay, this was my question. Are we in a Toy Story situation or a Winnie the Pooh situation? Are these real magical living dolls, or is this all in the mind of that weird girl who owns them? What's her name? Marcella? Mescaline? Oh, Muselix? Yeah.
Macedonia.
Is it like Secret Life of Toys? Is it like Gumby? Like what? I couldn't follow the rules. It just seemed like they're hanging out where they're you know, toys, and then all of a sudden actual demonic things happen to them.
You know, Adam, if it's imagined, then 50 of those witches are made of. Like, yeah. That can't be the case, right?
You watch the episode with all of the really obvious witches.
Yeah. I mean, God.
This whole show is pretty raggedy.
Yeah, it should be called
Boom.
Ratchet Ann and Andy.
Ratchety Ann.
You know, God, Adam, I just have to say, this is the worst. Is this
so far?
Yeah. Or let me pose a question to you. Do you think this is the worst looking cartoon in this whole lineup?
Huh. Possibly. I guess it's pretty stinky.
All channels included.
It's pretty stinky looking, but for some reason, this show that came out in the end of the 80s was probably required to look like those specials in that movie. I don't know who determined, like, no, nothing ever changes in Raggedy Land.
It looks like the movie, I'll give you that, but it looks like
it's Raggedyville. The only thing this show has going for it is that the cast is super awesome. Like, they don't do anything good with this terrible material because the writing's so terrible. So the voice of Raggedy Ann is Christina Lang, who is also Wendy on Peter Pan and the Pirates, Velma on A Pup Named Scooby-Doo, and Tulip on The Potato Head Kids. Josh Rodin played Raggedy Andy. He was Hamlet on the Hagar the Horrible animated special.
Whoa. Is there only one of those?
Mm-hmm. And he was fucking Popeye Jr. on Popeye and Son.
Oh my God.
Damn.
Popeye Jr., that stupid kid.
Are you excited? We'll get to see that one day. Kenneth Mars played the camel, but he was King Triton in all the Little Mermaid things. He was Tusker Nini on Darkwing Duck. He was Otto on Malcolm in the Middle. He was also on the Twilight Zone episode Tooth and Consequences. But most people know him from Young Frankenstein as the Inspector Kemp, who can't put his hand down. He's oddly German.
Oh, that must have been an 86 Twilight Zone or something.
I couldn't tell.
I don't recognize
Tooth and Consequences.
You don't recognize it from the original series.
The devil turns out to be the dentist. Dana Hill played Raggedy Dog, but most people know her as Audrey from National Lampoon's European Vacation. But she was also three different characters on The Fall Guy.
Ooh! I can sing 75% of that theme song. I won't.
She was Max on Goof Troop and Charles, the left head on Duckman. And then
yes,
Katie Lee was Sunny Bunny, but she was also Sunny Gummy, Baby Rolf, and has done nonstop voice work since 1977. Kath Source, Raggedy Cat, was Q-Bert on Futurama. She's Kanga and Winnie the Pooh, I guess the later years here. Phil and Lil DeVille from Rugrats, and she's worked nonstop since 1978. What a cast!
Yeah.
Wasted.
I thought you were going to say Q-Bert from the Q-Bert cartoon, but...
I forget what Q-Bert sounds like on that show.
Hmm.
I feel sick. You know, I swallowed a marble when I was a kid pretending to be Q-Bert. Because that's fun,
no
I guess.
No shit, really.
This show was really kind of hard to find to watch and make fun of.
Yep. You got to ask yourself why.
You think somebody's trying to bury this thing?
Yeah, they're trying to bury the lead. Yeah, why? Is it because nobody gives a fuck? You know, the one we watched earlier, some kid was recording on a shaky cam.
Yeah, so that means you could probably torrent this, and then somebody was like, I got to share this with somebody. What I'm seeing has to be talked about. So there's video of people watching the video online, but I found it on like Daily Motion and watch cartoons because I was like, I can't watch this off. I gotta at least be able to see it. Boy, a stinker.
I don't want to insult the kid or whoever put it up, but didn't it just add to it? Wouldn't it just perfect, like the person that watches Raggedy Ann and Andy can't hold a camera straight?
It would have been nice if we could have heard their parents fighting in the background or something.
Yeah.
Oh boy, I don't recommend this one hardcore.
Get out there and turn the satellite dish.
That's dunk.
No, me either. I cannot stress it enough. In my opinion, this is the worst cartoon in this entire lineup, and I'm including all channels. And I don't know, you know, that's all there is to it. I'm sorry, Raggedy Ann and Andy. your 40s version looked way better.
Pass on that one, sorry. But hey, you know what? It's 8:30. I'm just waking up. Maybe this Superman show.
Oh my God. Adam West is still in the house for this, Adam.
So he's the voice of Superman on this?
No, he's the voice of Batman when he shows.
So far, this looks great.
Yep. You know, so Super Friends ended 2 years before this, right? Mm-hmm. They had one filler year with Galactic Guardians, which I got a question about that. And then this looks good, because, and you know, as we saw earlier, this is, they were, I want to say Juan Garcia Lopez did new character designs that weren't very different, they just were more defined.
Yeah, these look really tight. I thought this was trying to mimic anime or was made by like Deke or something, but it's a Ruby Spears cartoon, so it's all Italy. Yeah.
Italy, that's interesting. And but you know, and as I was saying earlier, in my opinion, this looks 10 times better. Maybe 10 is harsh. Maybe 3 times better than than Super Friends.
Well, look, there's shadow work on this show.
Oh, yeah. There's
none. Anytime somebody made a shadow Saturday morning, that took a whole person.
Yeah. I mean, that's,
and it looks good.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? I mean,
so there's only one season of this version of this show.
There may be a couple of seasons of this, you know.
I only saw one available before. I think he just moved on to a different Superman show.
Well, as you recall, Adam, in 1989, we get Batman the Animated Series. So,
wow, so this is a year before the Batman Animated Series?
Can you believe that?
Wow, so this looks about that quality except the Sunshine version, but this looks, you know, I guess they made the Superman series post Batman the Animated Series, and it's kind of like a more stylized version of this show.
That's why I'm thinking this may have ended, right? Because when BTAS started, I think they might have been like, all right, get all the DC shows off the slate.
This is tonally off the consistency we're now trying to strive for.
Yeah. So
I could see Batman the movie kind of changing everyone's agenda. I mean, like, I don't think this is what we're doing.
It changed my agenda as a kid, you know, like. But, you know, so this is a weird little year, don't you think?
I didn't know 89. I guess that makes sense.
Well, that's the year of the Tim Burton movie. And unless I'm mistaken,
So the cartoon comes out between the two?
The cartoon came out concurrently with the Tim Burton movie.
Well, that makes sense.
The first one I saw on TV was the Mr. Freeze, the Dr. Freeze one. Mr. Freeze?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, I don't know where Spam is.
But,
yeah, can you believe it? This is a weird little year.
This is a good-looking show for this property and this year. The episode I watched was called By the Skin of the Dragon's Teeth. It's not nearly as racist as I thought it was gonna be at all. I was hoping it was gonna be like, oh boy. But they avoided it.
yeah. Was he hanging with like Jimmy and Lois? That seems to be a big thing.
Yeah. So Lex Luthor buys the Great Wall because it's a real estate scheme every time.
That's what he does.
Clark Kent is like a really clumsy dork. Superman's kind of hot looking, though. He puts out an explosion fire with a sail from a boat, and he's scooping up the water like a tsunami.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's how that works.
It's always questionable.
All right.
How does he do all that? Like, that is right along with the super breath, and how the hell does that work? You know what I'm saying? Like, that one doesn't exactly make sense.
I will get, like, usually I just can't get it up for Superman, but this was captivating. Like, there's a fight on top of a gondola that makes zero sense. Lex uses Superman as a human drill to get under the wall and find ancient Chinese treasure. But, of course, you know, it's haunted, and there's, like, a dragon fight. This thing's goofy as hell.
It's doing a lot.
You know who I really liked? Lex has a girlfriend named Mrs. Morganberry. In this series, at least. Does that she ever show up in anything else?
Nah, he would later get an assistant named Mercy.
Uh-huh. She's awesome. Really? She's like, Lexi, I thought you said we were gonna go for a ride!
Oh, so she's like a Harley Quinn?
No, she's like Miss Springfield, always with the mayor of Springfield being like, but...
Oh, yeah.
But baby,
I can't think of Mary Quimby's first name all of a sudden. But
yeah. Diamond Joe,
yeah, but Joe, they're at the hotel. Yeah,
that's oh God, that's your voice.
So she may have been an early version of Mercy. You know, that
she's awesome. She just pesters Lex Luthor while he's trying to do his business. He has the same voice. I think is it Michael Bell? Yeah, he has the same voice as Angelica's dad on Rugrats, so it's very distinctive, that voice. And I feel like here's another phrase that's going to come up a lot on this show. According to my calculations, and then acres of made up stuff.
Oh, so that's added to the list of. I'll tell you the later.
Yeah, I'll explain later. That's going up there with according to my calculations. I was like, oh man,
I'll explain later. Only said
I'll explain my calculations later. This Lois Lane kind of sucks. So I have an actual question. Is Superman into Lois Lane just because he likes a little bit of crazy?
Why is Superman into Lois Lane? That is a good question.
What makes her so special, Man of Steel?
She's a strong woman. They work together. You know, like...
She's strong-willed. Is she like I get a Veronica Lodge vibe from her. Like, is she wrong sometimes? And like, I can't get like her ratio. I remember Lois and Clark. She played her so brash that she would have to get saved. But I can't always get that from Lois Lane animated.
Lois is always very extremely strong-willed. You know, always strong-willed to the point that she can be. I don't want to say brash because isn't that what people always say about women when they're powerful, you know, but she's just...
They say worse.
I
just meant she's real pushy. Like, you don't see April O'Neil. She's like, I gotta get that scoop! But very non-confrontationally.
You're right.
Yeah. Lois Lane's always, like, barging into trouble.
And being sarcastic with Superman.
Scrappy-Doo style.
She's...
I don't care, I want my scoop! Like...
She's a real smartass, you know, but she's a fantastic character, you know, and on that later Bruce Timm series, excellent again, you know.
Well, but it just brings up, maybe it's the whole yin-yang thing, because she's very much a city girl, and he's very much a country boy, so I just didn't know, like, if that had been thought out at all.
I can't believe we're still rocking Jimmy here in 1980.
Yeah, what's Jimmy doing? Taking pictures. Man, his job. What does Jimmy do now? Because, you know, photos... You know, not the same.
He still does it. It depends on if you're talking about Smallville or not. It's all ridiculous. Smallville,
Jimmy.
Any Smallville fan will tell you that they jumped the shark on Jimmy. Because on Smallville, spoiler, Jimmy dies. And so you're like, how can he die? He's in the future. And then in the final episode, Jimmy comes back in and they're like, hey, Jimmy, what are you doing? And he's like, extra, extra. And
I'm fine.
And they're like, that's Jimmy's twin brother, Tommy. And he's going to go by the name Jimmy now.
Because he had a bonk on the noggin.
I don't know. Sick. But anyway.
Wow, really?
I think in 1988, we're past
If Jimmy. Suddenly he's revealed to be a shapeshifter, I'd be like, okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm. We'll never know because it's over now. They'll never get any more Smallville.
That's a sad ending. I liked this show. I didn't think I'd care.
Yeah, you know, it's not Super Friends, you know?
I'd recommend it. I didn't have a hard time finding it either.
No, me either. There were several options for 1988.
Somebody loves this show.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to say one thing, Adam. The previous year, the Super Friends were called Galactic Guardians. And you know what strikes me, or actually it didn't strike me until today about the name Galactic Guardians. So Galactic Guardians, would that mean that they are guardians of the galaxy? Copyright infringement.
Are they officially that name on that show? Who called for the Guardians?
Yeah.
Because I assume they all sound like that.
It's totally on the title card, man. Galactic Guardians. So, and I looked it up, and Guardians of the Galaxy originated in 1969.
Do the Guardians of the Galaxy go by We Are the Guardians of the Galaxy? Yeah. I think they did do that.
They did, because remember they're like, they call themselves the Guardians of the Galaxy, and he's like, they look like a bunch of assholes. Great movie.
But I never understood if they were actually the Super Friends, or if that was just the catty name. And the newspaper name for them.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember them ever going, hey, we're the Super Friends.
They're not, Adam. This is
Super We're not friends.
Super Friends itself is the only series.
It's a super convenience. That's all. They're super icy.
But they call them the Justice League on the show too, right?
Yeah, just us.
So, weird.
Pretty good. I'd recommend that one. That's fun.
This is good. That's great because I know you don't watch a ton of shows like that.
I saw a couple of the the post Batman ones long ago on Kids WB.
Superman 88 was a pleasant surprise.
Not bad. Not bad. Time for the old standards. Let's see. It is top of the hour, 9:00. That means it's time to indulge some Muppet Babies.
So that was an hour of Superman, huh?
No, it was just 30 minutes.
Okay, gotcha. Oh, 8:30.
30 minutes. But you know what? Let's watch an hour of Muppet Babies.
make them come true.
We'll do the same to you.
When your world seems kind of weird.
Weird.
They are.
Whoppy doo wee wop down, down, wop down, down. Here comes the clips that make this impossible to get on DVD. Psh, psh, psh. There's the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Oh, it's full version.
What is that, Star Wars?
What's up to the end?
I was thinking about this. So this is a doo-wop song, right?
This whole show is all about doo-wop.
Huh. That's interesting.
There we go. There's Star Wars footage.
TIE Fighter.
But you know what? They own all of this now. What's the problem? Where's the holdup?
I don't know.
Some clips won't come from episodes, so don't look for them. What can you do?
Their world looks like Ready Player One.
Yeah, it does sort of look like at the end there, it did.
Yeah.
And then that supernova goes off.
The intro looks great.
The intro still looks great because it's from 1986. This is season 5. The rest of the show, the animation's kind of taking a dip.
Season 5?
Season 5 of Muppet Babies.
And it lasted 7-8.
Yeah, it kept going. Not much has changed this season, though.
Yeah, I couldn't detect anything different this season when I was watching it.
Just animation quality, and I watched it. I must have stopped watching it at this point because I looked through the episodes and was like, I don't remember a lot of these.
Mm-hmm.
Kermit gets an enema, what?
No. I didn't remember the one I was watching.
His life's in him.
It's more of a parody of, it's more of a kind of an Alf Tales. I hate to say that, but.
Yeah, but it's not as painful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not, folks, it's way better than Alf Tales. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying they rotate. It's like a thematic. Like I said, it's like Ready Player One. There's a thematic shift going on.
To the point of referencing Nightmare on Elm Street, I watched the episode Elm Street Babies because I was like, damn.
God, if I'd seen that.
Well, there's no Animal Krueger or Freddy Weirdo. This is just an episode where the babies compare dreams, sort of like Elm Street 3. And then their dreams kind of infect each other. Kermit plays Rod Serling at one point in the Dream Zone.
Yes. So that, thank you. Not only Weird Science did it on TV.
That's right. Gonzo turns into the Sandman via doo-wop music and enters everyone's dreams through a yellow submarine. Weird. Subtle. And kidnaps Rolf from his dream. He's having a reverse Teen Wolf dream where he's turning into a person. It's really weird.
I can see why you can't get this on DVD now. The yellow submarine alone, am I right?
He's then dropped into Gonzo's dream that's Leave It to Beaver style, where he's referred to as Woofy and then Mr. Bark Bark, and until he starts screaming.
Great.
Oh, boy. I was so bummed out. Why would they reference Elm Street and then not do anything? I guess because that's terrifying, and this is a show about babies, but like you're setting yourself up. I was waiting for it. Make Beaker Freddy. That's not too scary.
I'm the same, man. I was disappointed.
In my dreams, I'm beautiful and bad.
I was thinking, people that listen to the first two episodes of the show, like they must think I'm really quiet because there's always a point where Adam does an impression, then I'm just like,
sorry, folks.
I'm silent laughing. I'm over here like, you know, and then I'm back. So
it's whether or not I'll do it. I have to decide though.
Man, I had to drudge through the Muppet Babies a little bit.
This wasn't a fun season of Muppet Babies. If you watch like first couple seasons, it's pretty fast action. It's animated. Interestingly, they use a lot of clips. For some reason, they were the first cartoon show to do a Star Wars episode.
Oh yeah, that whoa.
And it's not. And it's a pretty good episode. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm kind of shocked they have yet to do a full on Muppet Star Wars parody. There's that one episode of the Muppet Show.
Oh, that would be amazing.
But they won't put that out, even though they own it all. I don't know what the holdup's there. I like Muppet Babies. I wouldn't keep watching around this season because it's getting a little repetitive, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we've said all we can say.
You know, Adam, I don't want to sound like straight out of Wikipedia.
Why not?
Oh, yeah. So Muppet Babies actually started the whole movement of
turning. Right. Babification.
Yeah, and people compared it to a pup named Scooby-Doo, which is good, if you know, as we discussed, right?
Yeah, that turned out good.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the rest of the list. I read a pup named Scooby-Doo, and I was like, yes.
Well, there was, you know...
Fred's OCD.
There was a whole stream of these, and we had to talk about most of them.
Yeah, yeah. So I got to give it to him as the innovator. Like you said, I would love to see the initial episodes where there are clips.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's pretty fascinating. That doesn't really happen anymore.
Those will be fun episodes to revisit because they're really silly. And the voices are better. Like, they're more frenetic. It's just a crazier show at the beginning. It's more Muppety. And then it gets a little slow. I don't know if the timing changes or something, but they're like... It's really slow for some reason, like, as it goes on. Bad timing.
The pacing's bad?
Yeah, suddenly kind of dies out.
Adam, I'm sorry, man. I don't want to sound like an idiot, but I didn't realize that Howie Mandel...
Is all over that?
Is all over it. Yes, I was looking at the voice cast.
Who is... He's Animal? Or is he... He's Skeeter. Yeah, that's right, because Skeeter sounds just like Bobby.
You know, I
can't do it.
He might be Animal, but we know Frank Welker's on there, right?
Yeah, that's why I think like they must have split those up.
You can't throw a rock in the 80s and not hit Frank Welker.
Yeah, like I'm assuming like Frank Welker's on all of these shows. I just didn't mention him.
He's amazing.
He just played a flock of birds.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so. Muppet Babies. They're always Muppet Babies.
Recommend. It's 10 times better than Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Yeah. So far, slow morning. So it's an hour of Muppet Babies. So, oh man. So now what? It's 9 to 10. That's right. So it's Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pee-wee's Playhouse. And I watched a bunch of this, you know, to get ready.
Let's hear that sweet docile tune.
Sweet.
I just like the intro.
This animation, this stop motion animation looks great.
Do you know who did it?
Mm-mm.
I'll have to look that up for the first, whenever we see it for the first time.
It's better than the Penny stuff.
Is it the same people though? That's Craig Bartlett, I think, who did the Penny cartoons.
Penny's a lot rougher than this, but that sounds bad. This is a fantastic show. I mean, I don't want to just give away all my thoughts at once. But
I just needed to hear that serene sound.
I think this might be one of the greatest kid shows of all time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say one thing about Pee-wee. We'll go a lot more thoroughly through it on its first season.
By the way, Adam, you know what I did for this?
Because,
You know, since we've all seen a ton of Pee-wee,
uh-huh.
I just remarked, all my stuff here is stuff that is like oddball.
Okay, you didn't see the specific. This was a really weird time for Pee-wee because Pee-wee's doing Big Top Pee-wee in 88. So there's only two episodes of this season and the Christmas special, which I guess blew out their budget for the whole year. Makes sense when you see it.
Mm.
The two episodes they did was Reba Eats and Terry Runs, which sounds really weird when you say it out loud, and To Tell the Tooth. How many of these tooth-related puns? Well, whatever.
Oh, I didn't watch any of those.
It's always truth.
I must have watched the wrong season. I don't think it matters.
No. I mean, yeah, the specifics are marginally different. I'll say this. I really love Reba the mail lady. I think I love her because she's from reality and like this weird thing is just on her route. So for most of the time, I think this is the season where she's finally accepted, like, fine. Oh, right. I work for all these weirdos.
Yeah, that is so weird. You know, she's our avatar.
And she's wished into the playhouse and she gives Jambi like the stink eye and goes, Jambi, did you put a wish out on me?
Like, out of bounds.
And then Terry the Pterodactyl runs away from home. I love Terry the Pterodactyl. I have a stuffed one back at the house.
I didn't really care for the redheaded buzzcut kid. What's his name?
Randy? Yeah. Smoking makes you look cool.
He's my least favorite. I don't know. Are you? What, I don't know.
Hello, Pee-wee. I like Terry. I don't mind Randy. I like that he... I read that his design was based off of an evil Howdy Doody. So that kind of made him a little cooler.
That's funny, yeah. I like that. And you can totally see it. You know what's interesting to me, Adam? Dog chair. What?
Yes.
What is going yes. on? Because
I'm glad you mentioned that.
Because you got Cherry, and Cherry is like an entity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
she's
like,
a person.
Yeah. But then you got dog chair. It's just a
he
dog.
He is a chair that looks like a dog that breathes. So what's going on there? Sometimes they put a bone in front of dog chair. You know what? Dog chair is unofficially Cowboy Curtis's seat.
Because they both have cow pattern?
I guess. Like, well, whenever they're like sitting around.
Unofficially?
I guess when him and Cowboy Curtis, or him and Cowboy Coitus, when they're post-coitus hanging out on the chairs, Curtis hits dog chair and sings on, you know, strums the guitar on dog chair. I think the Del Rubio triplets sat on dog chair. You know, dog chair gets used.
Come here, dog chair.
When they redo the Playhouse, dog chair is moved about until he's back right where he was season one.
Right, I saw that. You know, but
it's the perfect spot.
Just in case anybody doesn't know, Cowboy Curtis is Lawrence Fishburne.
Right.
And
he loves sitting on dog-based furniture.
He's not phoning it in, man. He's doing it.
I guess if anybody got a spinoff of this show, it probably could have been Cowboy Curtis.
I can see
that. He's got the most legs.
Miss Yvonne could have had a variety show.
That would have been nuts. I think she's too integral to Pee-wee's Playhouse to branch out on her own show.
We're watching it, and Stephanie's like, oh my God, Miss Yvonne is so beautiful.
She's wonderful.
What is the deal?
And she's, I think, I like Ricardo.
She's a normal
lady. I like Ricardo because he's hot. Not yeah. as hot as the lifeguard was from season one, but here's what I wonder. What so on the schedule, it's Pee-wee, and then a break, and then Hey Vern, It's Ernest, and then Ed Grimley. I feel like they could have slotted one more character-based show in there. Who else from the 80s do you think could have gotten their own Pee-wee-type show? Here, I basically came up with, and I didn't realize I was doing, is pretty much all of comic relief. I was like, how come Whoopi Goldberg never did a weird kid show? How come Billy Crystal? Gilbert Gottfried, which I guess he... Oh, you know.
In retrospect, thank
Bobcat God. Goldthwait never... Well, he did Moxie, the Cartoon Network original series, but no one would call that entertaining. I'm just kind of surprised Balky and Michael Jackson didn't get one of these. Or the Suzuki guy, David Leisure. He should have got one. Hi, kids. I would have watched that. He just catches bullets every week with his teeth.
Surely Balky showed up on one of the Saturday morning previews at least.
He's right? in like most of them.
There you go. He's practically on there.
What a life those two led.
Mm-hmm.
The only time you ever saw them watch TV was the Saturday morning lineup, which they're on. So what were they seeing themselves? Whoa.
Mm-hmm. You know, so Adam, is there a correlation, like there's a bit of a correlation with Ernest to me and Pee-wee, because,
right.
you know, because they both did stuff that wasn't something mature, it was just for a slightly more mature audience, and then,
everybody could enjoy.
Yeah, and they made the television version, which was clean, and yet still thoroughly enjoyable, both of them. You know.
Yeah, it seemed like Pee-wee was a little more innuendo laden than Ernest ever was.
A little better than Ernest, you know, slightly better. Mm. Like all around, I think Pee-wee is, but still, Ernest is a great go at it. Which
yeah, we'll get to him momentarily. so yeah, everybody watch Pee-wee's Playhouse. That's obvious.
Oh my God, yes.
I don't know why you're listening to this show if you've never seen Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Oh yeah, you know, can I also point out another character I like?
Oh yeah.
Flory?
Ugh.
The floor? Is this a character?
Flory's horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of Flory, but I read Flory's design was meant to be terrifying. So that you learn that sometimes scary things are actually very friendly. Which in real life, I don't know if that's true, but you know, Flory.
Is that even a good lesson?
Yeah, is that a... Well, how about don't put your foot in Flory's mouth? That's a good lesson, too. So, yeah, watch Pee-wee's Playhouse.
Also, you know, I think Food Party may have...
Oh, yeah, Food Party, definitely.
got an influence from
that's,
this.
That's a hard Pee-wee's Playhouse
yeah.
show that came out much later on. What network was that on? IFC or
yeah. Everybody go check that out, Food Party.
Definitely. Yeah, that's if you've already watched your Pee-wee's, go watch Food Party. But now it's 10:30, so holy crap, you know who got their own show? Garfield.
Oh yeah. We're looking good right now. You know, this is a good little segment of the morning.
No, I'm having a good Saturday morning.
I mean, Pee-wee, Garfield, Muppet Baby, Superman.
Let's see. Now, the theme song always changed on Garfield and Friends. Let's see which one this was.
With the exception of the craptastic Raggedy Ann and Andy, if you can get over that depression, you know, you're sailing.
There we go. I believe first season of... God, I was so excited for Garfield and Friends when it first came out. Soon yeah. It's his friends, are they? Hey, who are those characters? Yeah. I'm not well read. I don't know what's going on.
A bunch of farm animals?
Oh my god, they killed Garfield. Stomped him to death. Oh, it's okay. It's just a cartoon.
They're
show.
Literally throwing him in our face.
They're trying to murder Garfield. Garfield just ate them. They just bashed out of his stomach. What's going on?
Who are they?
Animal Farm, the series via Garfield.
Boy, they sure do things different here on the farm.
Sheldon is clearly the USSR.
Oh my god.
Look at this.
It's violent.
I like it though. You know, it's a.
Splat!
Splat. It's a Looney Tunes era. Stealing
Friends
the stage.
Friends are there, but I don't care.
Frame rate's great.
Well, this looks at least as good as your average Garfield special.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then Garfield says something different every week.
So, is this the debut year?
Yes, this is season one, Garfield and Friends. Previously, it just been the subject of many animated primetime specials. This ran from 1988 to 1994, starring the irreplaceable, we still feel it, Lorenzo Musac.
Yes.
He's just born to play Garfield.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
You know, Adam,
this can't be replaced.
I got the same thing you said right here, which is the art's at its best.
It's a good looking Saturday morning cartoon show for the 80s.
Yeah, it looks like the shows, the primetime.
It doesn't look like Beanie and Cecil or Mighty Mouse. It's not like the animation isn't taking any risks, but you know what they're doing? They're actually writing funny material. But it's based on Garfield, and this look kind of conforms well to the standard of animation needed for Saturday morning.
This is technically looks far better than Mighty Mouse. Technically, you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. But it's not a different show, but
yeah, you're
still
right.
Good.
You're right.
Tom Hughes is still playing John Arbuckle and Binky the Clown, and that's all he'll ever do.
Hilarious.
Greg Berger, who's Odie. You may also know him as Cornfed from Duckman. He was the Gromble from Real Monsters, Leo from Gargoyles, and Grimlock.
Really?
You might know.
Cornfed and Grimlock were the same person?
How's it going?
I arrived at the house at 3 o'clock. Duckman.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
My name is Cornfed.
This show had a ton of Nermal the cat, who I don't think you saw on the show ever. Nermal is a boy, sounds like a girl, because the voice was Desiree Goyette. She composed most of the music for the show and random Garfield and Peanut specials throughout the 80s.
I would have guessed Nermal maybe appeared once or twice on the previous.
I don't remember ever seeing Nermal in a special. And of course, that's the beginning of mailing Nermal to Abu Dhabi. I don't know the origins of that joke at all.
It was totally random back then. It seems
They must have done that in the strip, and we're like, just do that every time. It's just always Abu Dhabi. Yep.
These days, if you're from America, you really probably don't. I don't even think you can visit Abu Dhabi. Literally, I think we cannot go to Abu Dhabi. But
it was that kind of show.
Back then, it was funny. You know what, Adam? By the way, I don't mean to interrupt here, but before I forget. I was watching Garfield and in preparation for this, and Garfield was like, people that do that should be drug out into the street and shot.
That was his catchphrase.
Wow.
In the specials, he would say, nice touch. But then in addition, people who do something that just happened should be drug out in the street and shot.
Holy shit. They would never allow that.
Crucify them. Yeah, Garfield is intense. I like this version of Garfield. He's kind of like he's on It's Gary Shandling show. He seems to be aware he's host of like a kid's show where he can't really... He's like, this is this week's setup. Don't blame me. Oh, it's a real one of those shows where he's like, I'm just an actor on this thing called Garfield and Friends.
It's a fourth wall breaker.
Like just all the time, though, because I guess how else would we communicate with Garfield if he weren't always talking to us? It's a real Malcolm in the Middle situation, I guess.
Odie doesn't talk.
Odie's still brain dead. Mm-hmm. He's just dumb.
Except every now and then. When Odie gets
really?
When Odie gets mad, he seems to suddenly have a normal intelligence. I don't know if you noticed. Whenever his eyebrows arch and he marches somewhere. Yeah.
I always liked the immortal do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do Odie theme. Has that ever been noted by anyone? I noted it. this series was announced during the Garfield special that year. Happy birthday, Garfield.
Oh.
Which I remember. That's interesting. I remember seeing him being so Jones. I was like, yes, yes, there should be a Garfield special or TV series. But also I watched it and they tease an animated Garfield film based off of the Garfield book, Garfield's Judgment Day, that never got made. So I wonder what happened to that.
No shit, really?
They're recording a song for it in the special. I guess it never found funding. That's a weird one to make into a movie, basically like the world's coming to an end and like now, oh, John can hear Garfield. So it's like suddenly, oh, wow. Okay.
I'm fascinated.
That would have been something.
I'm fascinated. I would love to see that.
The other part of this show is U.S. Acres. Were you familiar with U.S. Acres before you saw the show? Were you like, who are they?
Yeah, barely.
Who the fuck?
You know, I got Adam, let me tell you, I was a huge Garfield fan. I had all the books.
Same here.
And, you know, once they started having those big volumes, they started throwing U.S. Acres in it in the back.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
U.S. Acres had those small volumes, just like Garfield.
Yeah, the weird rectangle books. Yeah. I had those.
I want to say they had a couple, you know, before the first big book, but...
I didn't know U.S. Acres made it to big book. So, like, the Sunday ones were in color and stuff like that. I just had the black and whites.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. When they had those big Far Side size ones, I think U.S. Acres was in the back. But
it was on our local paper, so I was like, oh, it's that. Okay. And then I found a couple of the books, and I was like, Jim Davis, okay. He nailed Monday and lasagna-based humor. I wonder what Italian food they eat on the farm.
Jokes about dragging people into the street and shooting them.
So Jim Davis was born in Indiana, so I can only assume all of these things take... Everybody's a Hoosier on this show. There's a farm. John's family is from a farm. So I'm assuming this takes place in Indiana.
Huh.
Just putting that out there. U.S. Acres... let's see, who did the cat? Orson the Pig, Roy Rooster, Wade the Duck, who was voiced by Howard Morris. Howard Morris, he was in High Anxiety and History of the World Part 1 and Life Stinks. So he did three Mel Brooks movies. He sounds like this. He's kind of got an Edwin tone to him, too. And he was Ernest T. Bass on Andy Griffith. And he did the Twilight Zone episode, I Dream a Genie.
Oh, that?
Another Zoner.
That's an original series one.
Another Zoner.
Yeah, oh, he runs...
I'm the genie. Was he the genie in that, or...
No, he runs a...
I want a wish!
He runs a pawn shop.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, so he's like, I can't give you any more money. You know, and he's
I can't give you any more money.
And then they it's turned him
so
into...
So Edwinny, though.
He turns into Hitler at one point.
What?
And he's like, I'm Hitler. It's really
he's
good.
He's so sticky. It's so weird to hear him say, I'm Hitler.
Oh, my God. Highly recommend. Total recommend. I think it's season one.
Also, there was Booker the Chick, Sheldon the Egg, who would never hatch, Bo the Stoned Ram, and Lanel and the Lesbian Sheep. I assume. two characters did not make it on the TV show that were in the strip were Cody the Dog and Blue the Cat. They didn't make the cut. Not funny enough. And there's already enough cats and dogs on this show, so...
Sheldon just doesn't want to come out of his shell.
Sheldon hatches in one episode, and there's just another shell underneath it. Like, I guess I'm just an egg!
He's like the Cartman of the show.
I guess, yeah.
His origin
somebody's gotta be somebody.
Dubious.
This show is trying. That's what I felt like. I was shocked. I was like, I felt like this was gonna be like, well...
I was
gonna have a Garfield attitude toward it, but no, it was a pretty funny show.
I was surprised to see the art be at the level of the you know, primetime specials, actually. I was like, I don't remember this. Maybe a few years later, it wasn't like that, but...
I don't know why I wrote this show off so hardcore. Like, ugh, can't be marginally entertaining. It was pretty good. I watched one called Nighty Nightmare, where John... This is funny. John has to order and eat a pizza in secret like an animal because his cat eats it all. So the Garfield has a musical dream that to Italian opera. The music on this show is great. Where he eats until he's a huge big monster. And John says, I knew this would happen. Which that made me laugh. Because he's Garfzilla at this point. Garfield wakes up and takes a 20-minute diet. So he won't eat for the rest of the episode. The end. This show was composed of two Garfield cartoons. One U.S. Acres cartoon. And then one or two quickies, which were little animated versions of comic strips. They were like, yeah, this will fill the rest of the time.
I like that because it makes it move right along.
It made me feel like, I remember that one. Hey, I remember that one. And then the U.S. Acres I watched was called Banana Nose.
That's where gonna be Wade.
There's a callback to the pirate music from the Halloween special when Roy Rooster plays a pirate prank on the other livestock.
Oh, man.
So they start calling him Banana Nose and they sing a dumb, funny song. It was pretty decent for a dippy little cartoon. Then things get awful when I Ode to Odie, where Garfield raps about Odie.
Hey, get ready for this.
Oh, no.
And then the title card, Odie looks like Poochie. So I was like, uh-oh, this is where this comes from. It sounded like Deep, Deep Trouble. Deep Trouble!
fights... You damned if you do. You damned if you don't.
Odie fights a bulldog for a bone. But then he just ends up leaving with his two girlfriends, having a three-way. What the... What? That's what he's like. He just leaves with two chicks arm in arm, like leaving the club.
I told you.
Tell me what happened.
I told you, Adam. Sometimes Odie is smart.
They're dogs. I'd watch more of this cartoon.
I would too. You see what I got right here? I got, you could do a lot worse.
Yeah.
I think, maybe even higher than that. This is good stuff.
I'm going to probably watch, look forward to watching more Garfield and Friends when we have to.
Which
just to see how things have changed, because I know they add new characters. I know Binky the Clown becomes more prevalent.
The Binky one. I watched one of the Binky ones, though. Hilarious.
All he does is scream, right?
He sings the happy birthday song.
Whoop-dee-doo. Whoop-dee-doo. Oh, wait, that's brutal.
Open up your presents. That was, man, that was hilarious. I was dying.
They're definitely making fun of what they are a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I compared it to Gary Shandling. It's lightly postmodern. It's not too bad.
Recommend.
Yes, it's pretty enjoyable. So it's 11 o'clock on the hour. Hey Vern, it's Ernest. Ooh. Oh my. Hey, was this made in the '80s?
Is this always the intro?
Yes.
Oh.
Just let that theme song fart its way into your heart.
I don't even remember this theme song at all.
No!
My mind's blown. Is this my famous singing?
No. Hey, Vern! It's me!
Look, all characters are real.
I'm on TV! Oof.
It's bad, man.
Okay, that's a terrible theme song.
It is.
Even for Ernest.
It's so terrible that I didn't remember it at all.
You know what it reminded me of? On Rocco's Modern Life, their favorite show is the... Oh, what was it? Something real stupid. But the theme song is just like a series of farts. Brutal. Other than that... This is fine. I had a good time watching it. I think you have to kind of like Ernest.
Ah, man, you know.
Is this a fur fan only affair, you think? Or do you think anybody could fall in love with the Ernest brand of characters?
No. You know, I kind of feel like it's, I hate to say
it. Be in the know?
Yeah. You know, Adam, I hate to be like Captain Fanboy, another show in a row right after Garfield, but I was watching these Ernest tapes when I was like 11. You know?
Uh-huh. Me even younger.
Yeah, you could just...
I'm like eight, at least.
Fantastic stuff.
You know what? Seven, because I must have seen Goes to Camp before this.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, fantastic stuff for that age, I guess, but still.
This was another one where I was like, yes, finally, yes. Garfield, then Ernest, are you kidding? Yes, these all make sense. All of my favorite things should be a show.
Yeah, and it's sandwich with Pee-wee, you know? So this is great.
Do you think there was some reason they put a show in between the two? They're like, we don't really want Ernest and Pee-wee to touch. You think maybe Paul Rubens was like, I'd prefer if Jim Varney kept his show 30 minutes away from mine.
And he'd be like, well, here's the thing, boss.
Sure thing, Mr. Rubens. Gee, Mr. Rubens, I just wanted it. Because he kind of sounded like...
You were doing the woman?
He sounds like... Oh, man, Aunt Nelda? Okay, so we get a taste of all the extra Jim Varney characters somehow in the Pee-wee movies, but this is the first time they're actual other people. They're not just some, like, problem Ernest has, costume Ernest is putting on, or whatever. So this is a cast of characters. Baby Ernest, who's flat-out ripping off Mark Wiener... Somebody else who got a very, not really, I wouldn't call his show Pee-wee-like. It wasn't, Wienerville wasn't very Pee-wee-esque, but it definitely benefited from coming after Pee-wee and probably got pushed as such.
This is simultaneous, I guess, coming out, debut?
Wienerville comes out in a couple years.
No, I mean, where?
Pee-wee and Ernest?
Yeah. Did Ernest come first?
I think they were both workshopped around at the same time. It's kind of hard to pin down. One was doing live shows and one was doing commercials, so...
I was just, you know, getting at, were they independent of each other? Like, you know.
Well, it's not like they're alike.
No, they're not. Just the...
Pee-wee's kind of a winner who learns, and Ernest is kind of an earnest loser.
Mm-hmm.
Who we, I don't know, we root for? Question mark? Anyway, the other characters are guy who lives with iguana, matte finish photographer... who said the phrase squeeze off a couple when I watched his Dust Bunny, puppet Dust Bunny that I love. Lonnie Don's School of Hollywood sound effects. That's the part where every week they fart as the sound effect.
That is awesome.
They long way to introduce it. My Father the Clown, which is a weird sitcom or whatever. Ernest's Tongue, where we get a close-up of Ernest's tongue. Haircut, where Ernest wants to look like a Wall Street tycoon, and it's always a pun or sound-alike or something that sounds like Wall Street. When I was a kid, I was like, I can't believe they're doing that every episode. Like, I just can't believe it.
This is great.
Let's see. Dr. Otto and Willy the Robot reappear after... they got their own movie. Before Ernest had a movie, Dr. Otto, Jim Varney, was like, this character's got more legs than Ernest. He's like this evil... He's like Dr. Evil if Dr. Evil had a hand coming out of his head and wore, like, electronic garbage.
Is it worth watching?
Dr. Otto? Ooh. That's worse than this in terms of for Ernest fans only. Because Ernest isn't in it. It's all the peripheral characters trying to kill these other characters we don't even see again or care about. So it's a real... It's trippy. I mean...
He's dedicated
to just these. It's one of those movies where you're like, wow, a series of decisions. Interesting decisions. and, of course, the real stars of this show are Chuck and Bobby. Gaylord Sartain from... Fried Green Tomatoes, of course, and Bill Burr as Bobby. Chuck and Bobby. I love Chuck. He's in most of the movies. He does that eyeball thing anytime something suspicious happens. He also plays Matt Finish and Lonnie Don, the funniest other characters on this show.
I like Chuck because Chuck doesn't give a damn. It's like Chuck doesn't even give a damn if you think he's funny. You know what I mean?
That guy is just yammering. Out loud things he's gonna do. It's insane.
He's ballsy, you know? Like, he does those same protracted jokes every time.
All of this and were like, kid show.
I know, it's amazing.
You tell me. God. Yeah, or what?
Hey, tell me, Adam. they used to do on the video, the ones you could rent, there was a character, it was just his father.
Oh, yeah. Was he the one that talked like this? That character does not appear on this show, you're right.
I wondered.
Snooty Ernest character. Who I believe is in Ernest Scared Stupid as one of his personalities.
That's interesting. Okay.
Really?
He must have gotten rid of that. He must have been like, all right, you know.
The episode I watched was called Movies. I've seen all of them, but what I watched for this was Movies, where Vernon and Ern make a film, and all of the characters go to a movie theater. Rather than masturbate as Pee-wee did, Jim Varney engages in some sort of clownery. go in a different direction. The movie they make is called Wicked Willie versus Crocodile Ernie. Here's some stats for you. Jim Varney won a Daytime Emmy for his performance. And the titles won as well. Those titles we watched that went wah, 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 doo, 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 those won an Emmy for titles.
That's my least favorite part of the whole show. Now, and because I didn't remember.
It's brutal. If you can make it through that, it's just like if you were assaulted by a bubble tape commercial. It's really brutal. This show got canceled because it probably cost a little more than CBS wanted to pay. But there was a letter writing campaign that epically failed. So you get 13 fun, earnest...
that is
quite. An episode for every Ernest movie, right? And there are 13 Ernest movies practically?
Yep. I love it.
I don't know whether to suggest this or not.
Really?
I guess.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. It's like I'd almost suggest to watch Ernest Goes to Camp instead of this, maybe.
But you know what you're missing out? I kind of like half of these Ernest characters, and you get a bit of Chuck, but there's no Bobby in Ernest Goes to Camp.
It's just...
It's too Ernest. Know what I mean? It's not as goofy as, say, Ernest Goes to Jail.
This is just for a younger audience. It's like it's just like the difference between Big Top Pee Wee
or people over 80.
Yeah, so
from 8 to 80, but you know the other way is like 80 and up and 8 and down is the perfect.
I recommend to show it to your kids. How about that?
Hey Vern, It's Ernest is a great show to not think too hard about.
Mm-hmm.
And that brings us to Flip.
I knew my role had to stop here somewhere.
Let's see. I don't think Flip has. I could not find much about Flip. No one can. there's a couple of clips on YouTube.
Flip is the combo breaker.
Where's my Flip clip?
I mean, we had Superman. We had Muppet Babies. We had Pee Wee. We had Garfield. We had Burn.
Ernest. Flip comes on. Hey, this sounds like my life. Hey, man. This show really gets me. It's got lockers and screaming children and wailing guitars. It's not a pack of matches that says, come meet Colin Quinn in this alley for a show. But this is basically the same type of stuff, right? It's like tunes. What were the other topics, actually?
You know, that intro looked like...
Action!
Is it from the maker of Saved by the Bell's intro?
Yet again, it looks like the purpley lightning bolty bullshit from that show's opening.
Well, it looks like hell so far.
It's Flip! No, Flip Wilson did not get a children's show. Nor is this an extreme reboot of Flipper. Or some sort of weekly homage to the works of Oob Iwerks. This was replaced... But after about a month with reruns of Teen Wolf from 86. So they were like, bring that back. Like, that makes more sense than Flip.
The cartoon.
What are we doing?
Yep.
This is another one of those teen fill-in-the-blank shows. Because they were like, MTV, maybe we can just condense it to 30 minutes and get away with saying that's programming. Wrong. Many affiliates just didn't bother airing it and instead started Soul Train earlier than they tended to, or WWE. did you watch a clip of Flip?
Nope.
Here's what happens in the three clips of Flip that I found. A teen tries to rent cartoon favorites from what appears to be a Radio Shack, where a mean old store owner refuses. He's just an asshole. And then this other teen comes in dressed as a detective and wraps the adult up in video in like fast vision to spin.
Everything's funnier in fast motion.
That's the end of that segment. next segment, we then cut to headless torsos of hip teens talking, insulting each other, and going on about surfing and baseball, then money. It's sort of like a scene from Welcome Freshman, directed by Victor Salvia. It's all midsections, and yeah, having money's really hard when you don't have a job. And then we vaguely just lose interest. That's the end of that bit. Then under Tunes, Weird Al shows up. Gave an interview about being a teenager and showed a lot of videos and clips from The Complete Al. That would have been delightful to see. Also, an appearance of Alyssa Milano is promised.
What?
The final clip, this is fun. Under Action, Mark Gator
Rogowski did some skateboarding. Four years later, he went to prison for brutal rape and murder.
Oh my God, really? Dear Lord.
He's the subject of Stoked, a documentary about the rise and fall of Mark Gator Rogowski. Fun times.
I had no idea.
Fun times for you, bad times for him. Saturday morning flip. Flip the justice system over.
Is there a documentary about that? That's Stoked?
It's called Stoked.
Oh, man, I'm watching that.
Stoked. It's all online. I was shocked when I typed it in. It was like, good grief.
I want to watch
that. I got to get the scoop.
I was really into skateboard art, and that was one of the famous ones, was Gators.
Oh, right on. It had
like a spiral, you know?
Apparently, everybody on the comment boards were talking about how cool he was before he became a monster, so... Could have been somebody. I think he just had a parole hearing, so maybe he's out now. Dear. We wish you the best.
Maybe.
Please don't visit us.
Yeah. So what's after flip? Anything good?
Let's see. So it's noon. That means it's Mighty Mouse. This cartoon, this is its second season, so it's going out. This cartoon's great.
Yeah, you know, it's...
wonderful.
You should probably say, like, right off the bat, it's from...
Ralph Bashke had a hand in this. This mm-hmm. is his production. He made an impact doing this. He hired a bunch of CalArt kids. Like season one, we had John Chris Felici, but at this point, he's left for Beanie and Cecil and having a bad time because Ralph Bashke's not there to fight with the network over every weird thing mm-hmm. they deem bad. Here's a bunch of people who worked on the show: Lynn Naylor, Jim Reardon, Bruce Timm, Jim Smith, Mike Cazala, Eddie Fitzgerald, Bob Jacks, Tom Mitten, the Brain himself, Kent Butterworth, Jim Gomez, and Andrew Stanton. All these people have gone on to work on all of your favorite things ever.
Mm-hmm. So, this is weird because it's like this kind of bookends our first few episodes because mm-hmm. the very first thing we talked about was
Beanie and Cecil.
Beanie and Cecil. And now we got this.
The other end of the dime, I guess.
This is much more frenetic.
Oh, yeah. They're probably allowed to do whatever they wanted on that show. And you can... There's a difference.
Yeah. You know, the animation, that's a whole, that's wild.
It's insane.
It is.
You know what? I think I said when we watched Beanie and Cecil that the drawing was doing all the heavy work. Here, the animation is trying to keep up with the really cool drawings, and the writing's really good. So everything's firing on this show. It's like a joke pileup.
Rapid fire jokes.
And there's innuendo, but via situational drawing. Like, somebody will be like, I'm begging you, Mighty Mouse. And then for like 2 seconds, they'll be like in the mid-waist of Mighty Mouse. And Mighty Mouse's face will just kind of be like...
Yeah.
Smirking. And you're like, I know what that means, but why did that happen? Why? How did that... That's mm-hmm. okay. I saw some insane stuff.
I did too. And I'm like,
it's quick.
And one of the ones I watched... At the end of a scene, Mighty Mouse makes a motion, and I had to rewind it and get Stephanie to come look and be like, what is he doing here? Because they show him, and he does this. He's like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he looks like he has a... He looks like he ends in a seizure, and then the black closes on him, and it ends the show, you know? And so he's just like... And there's no explanation.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of no explanations going on. Like, random cameos of... I'm assuming the animation team? Like, there's just faces all over the place.
There are faces, yeah.
Like, who could that have been?
You know, I noticed, like, for instance, 8 shirtless men in suspenders.
Yeah, it's the beginning of attractive people in cartoons. Because that was unencouraged.
That's wild.
Discouraged, I mean.
This is, like, at an airplane... pace of joking, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah,
there's a joke every frame,
and sometimes yeah, it's either nonsense or it's just a non sequitur, but sometimes it's just
I don't know. This show's really making fun of the mediocrity of Saturday morning, and it's making fun of like the stupidity of TV. Mm-hmm. It's re-emerging animation direction and creator-driven stories. So it's just unlike any animal you've seen for the past couple of decades. It doesn't feel like it belongs on this TV.
Like it needs to be on MTV, maybe. It's also lampooning the original series, hardcore. You know what I mean? Like, this is a total laugh at the original series.
Kind definitely. Of. Definitely. Oh, yeah. They bring back oil can Harry, who hasn't been seen since who knows when. They just made him nuts. The episodes I thought were noteworthy were Don't Touch That Dial, which is probably one of the most noteworthy of the whole show. Jim Reardon wrote it. It just trashes Saturday morning cartoons where Mighty Mouse gets sucked into the TV, basically. And then he goes through, like, a couple Hanna-Barbera parodies. One of them, the Jetstones, which is, like, the Flintstones, but if they lived on the Jetsons, like, floating isles. So it just makes no sense. And then he goes to, I think, what must be the first Scooby-Doo parody on another cartoon, where he goes to a show called Ring-a-Ding. And then he goes to Rocky and Hoodwinkle, and it's Rocky Balboa. And then the real Gag Busters, who are barely animated and come in to kill any sense of fun on the show. I remember being like 8 or 9 and being like shocked. I was like, oh my gosh, there's a difference in this show, that show. I was suddenly aware of all the differences in time periods and animation. Because the Scooby stuff was just like groovy. I was like, wow. And they talked about Nixon. I was like, this is an adult show. It was really crazy.
Yeah, also, like, for instance, right? They're just dancing the Charleston and shit out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Like, stuff that doesn't have to do with the time period at all. Kids aren't going to get...
This is one cartoon that's also like, who's this for? But also, the fact they don't care makes it feel kind of like Freakazoid.
Yeah.
There's a real flippancy.
Can I give you one more example of how they do not give a fuck? There's one scene where Mighty Mouse is flying, and then he, like, goes through a building, and the building is, like, an animation studio. And they show a bunch of animators, and they're, like, chained to their drawing boards.
Subtle.
They show the lead one, and he's, like, draw something. Then a guy comes in and is like, you're fired.
Everybody work.
It was a total, non sequitur? Or, you know, it didn't, it had nothing to do with anything, but, you know.
You would just have to know to look out for that. I mean, they did that in old school cartoons.
Yeah, that's true.
So you just have to know this is a callback to that. What I really liked about this show was there was a ton of animal superheroes who can't seem to fathom their super personas very much differently than their actual ones. So there's a superhero cow called The Cow. There's a bat-based bat superhero called Bat-Bat. Like, nobody's really... There's not a lot of depth going on. They bring back the craziest characters for this show. There's one called Mighty's Wedlock Whimsy, where Gandy Goose and Sourpuss, these ancient characters, are retroactively made this kind of closeted homosexual couple. Like, they're taking a shower together when Gandy Goose is like, oh, Sourpuss, poor Mighty Mouth. You just hear Sourpuss go like, bring back the soap. I was like, jeez.
Wow.
And then...
Carte blanche.
Mighty Mouse has a bachelor party with those characters, Heckle and Jekyll, and they bring back Deputy Dog, who they've made violently imbecilic. He's like, I'm gonna marry you too. He's really stupid now.
Mm-hmm.
Then Mighty Mouse has a honeymooner's nightmare, where the cow is the Ralph character, or the Art Carney character, and
wow.
Mighty Mouse's son looks suspiciously like the cow. Hi, Dad, moo! So I was like, that's not very subtle. But at the end of the episode, the animator quits because he doesn't want to marry them off. I was like, what the...
So meta.
Good grief.
Man, that's amazing.
That show could barely contain itself.
Oh, you know, I just wanted to mention they also had a 2001 parody. You remember you were saying that even the bassist of...
Oh, yeah.
Sketches have a 2001 parody
at some point.
Yeah, I noticed one while I was watching. Also, everything is dancing constantly.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of groovy movement.
Yeah, and weird colors. Like, they'll just cut to a scene and two cats are dancing, and they're like, one's purple and one's
blue. Yeah, there's some really interesting color work going on.
Adam, this is a totally different beast than Beanie and Cecil.
I think it's all because it's a lot of the same people, but the writing allowed
for the storyboard artists to be more in control on this show than they were on Beanie and Cecil. I think that's why John Kay dropped out really quick. And why his next show followed what worked on both of those more closely. Because Ren and Stimpy is the best of those two shows, really.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the art is a lot more technically proficient and slick on...
It's the weirdest style of animation. It's almost... It's not squiggly, but it's just so... It's so draw-early. Like, I don't know. You can tell, like, the... Like, Bruce Timm's working on this. So, like, you know the storyboards are very specific.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, but...
But till Ren and Stimpy, they haven't developed an overseas system for doing pose-to-pose animation quite like that for television. So this is that, just, it's more like Morphe, like characters morph into the next drawing.
Yeah.
In a really lively way that makes the whole show bouncy, like, in a way, I don't know what they even intended, it just made the show look alive.
A lot of reusing of shots.
This show bastardized a lot of previously used material from itself, which, I guess that's the John Kay staples, wow. Like we ran out of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a whole episode where Mighty Mouse is on trial for the disappearance of Skippy the orphan mouse, and they just use repurposed footage, and then they just replaced it all with harshly sarcastic and mean comments like I'm Skippy, they all love me because I represent the audience, ha ha he, like they're just very on the nose about it. Then he turns into, they do a Silver Surfer parody where they're like, didn't he outshine you as a superhero too? And he becomes like this rust-colored rodent. But it was all a dream. This show was crazy. And of course, this is the show that got canceled after the episode. The Littlest Tramp, where Mighty Mouse snorts a crushed-up flower. And some people thought that was a little cocaine joke.
Mm-hmm. Famous. You know, that
which
is.
Which it wasn't. I guess. Well, the joke is like the littlest tramp gives Mighty Mouse a flower and he loves it so much he crushes it, and then later he pulls it out to smell it and it's powder, so he just goes all up his nose. Foom.
Wow.
It's not like Mighty Mouse was like, I better got a line with this razor. Ooh. Oh.
My bad.
Here I come. Thank you.
I just want to say one last thing. I like the way when he's Mike Mouse.
Oh yeah, it's the first time Mike Mouse, his persona, is invented.
First of all, he's always riding around that old Sanford and Son truck.
Right, it's right. Funny. He's got a weird, but junky life.
I love the way his costume sticks out.
I was talking about that when I was watching it. I was like, you know what? I love the way his super suit is just all kinds of hanging out of his clothes and nobody can figure it out.
It's long sleeve.
So he wears short sleeve shirt.
Mike Mouse.
You can see it over the collar. You can see it down the arms. It makes no sense.
I was just dying at that. Oh my God.
It's like that through the whole show though. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I recommend this highly.
Yeah, the DVD's great. There's commentary from John Kay and company. There's some scary interviews with Ralph Bashy. I'm playing it cool! Informative. This is key in the second animation renaissance. So this is a key series before things get really good again.
Yeah, you're totally right. I can see it, you know.
You can tell, like, this and Beanie and Cecil, they're just Ren and Stimpy without the cash. So they're kind of like...
Where do you put, if the two had to face off?
Oh, Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse just works nonstop for longer. Mm-hmm. Beanie and Cecil's just so constrained. I love it. I love Beanie and Cecil so much I want it to be good. Because even like Ren and Stimpy, when someone else is doing them, they're still kind of appealing. They're just something good about them. But
you're right. They're far more restrained than this.
Mighty Mouse is allowed to get away with so much more. I don't feel like... I don't know. There were a couple of like jokes in Beanie and Cecil where I was like, okay. But they weren't as rapid fire. I didn't go, wait. On Beanie and Cecil at any point. Mm-hmm. I did go, wait, did I just see... Wow.
Me too. You know, some of the stuff you're like, I cannot believe... Or you're like, what am I looking at? But highly recommended. CBS just still killing it. But
one more show before it's the afternoon. It's 12:30, CBS Story Break. Reruns. They haven't made a new one of these in years.
What is this?
It's still being hosted by Bob Keeshan, K. Captain Kangaroo. Did you not know this show?
No.
It's just an awesome guitar lick, and then you see Captain Kangaroo come out and goes, it's like if...
Can I guess first?
Sure. What do you think CBS Story Break is about?
Is it like Goosebumps type stories?
Well, you're close, sort of. Goosebumps, instead of Goosebumps, it's more like How to Eat Fried Worms. You know, the light Beverly Cleary level of things.
Okay, I would have turned that
Chocolate Fever. Klutz. You know, just lots of like, okay.
Probably some lower-end versions, I'd imagine. I'd rather watch the animated versions.
The only one I wanted to watch I couldn't find. Because I remembered most of them pretty well because they reran them for a decade. The episode, if anybody can find this, please help me out. It's called The Double Disappearance of Walter Fosbeck. It's total lost media. This kid falls into an alternate dinosaur dimension and switches places with his dinosaur counterpart in Dinosaur World. And then he's held captive by dinosaur scientists who keep trying to feed him peanut butter sandwiches.
Of course.
Bizarre thing. CBS Story Break was really cool. I guess certain episodes are available and some aren't on YouTube. They all seem to have this weird hard coding, so I don't know. Whoever first bootlegged them, good job.
Hard coding?
Yeah, so it's got English hard like subtitles hard coded on there.
Gotcha.
Even though it's in English. And classic VHS looks like it's shot through a microwave. So somebody should put out a decent copy of CBS Story Break. It's not a bad series. I think Hanna-Barbera worked on it.
So
what a way to end a great year. But you know what? There were other shows that weren't on Saturday morning. This is the syndicated incorporated list. This year, COPS was the Central Organization of Police Specialists. Fantastic Max.
COPS, filming location with men and women, law enforcement, yep. Suspects, transit, temporary, and guilty in a court of law.
This is the one they would always do the PSAs for, like, hey, don't be alone on a playground. COPS. And be like, hey, this isn't the show. What are they talking about? I think each episode ended much like G.I. Joe with a PSA to stay safe, only this one was live action from not the cartoon characters. And they would air those for years after the show went off. So it was very like, is there a new season of COPS coming out?
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. This isn't COPE.
Yeah, COPS.
Oh, I'm missing it. Bad. I got you.
It's all lumpy and steroidy and... Yeah. I don't know what was appealing about it. It stood for the Central Organization of Police Specialists, not just, you know, police.
They were trying something here. I don't know what it was exactly.
I don't know what that show was, but we don't have to look into it. That's if we don't funny. Want to. This year also, Fantastic Max, the super smart baby show, Denver the Last Dinosaur, actually an alien.
That's great.
First year of Count Duckula, which Nickelodeon bought for syndication. Wow. Dino Riders, RoboCop, together for the Marvel Action Universe Hour. The new Yogi Bear show. The Police Academy cartoon.
What?
Then we get to the specials that year. Flintstone Kids, Just Say No with Michael Jackstone. This is America, Charlie Brown.
There's a joke in there somewhere.
Garfield's Nine Lives, Christmas in Tattertown. That was another Ralph Bashke item that Excellent. Ended up on Nickelodeon. Madeline had a special... Pee-wee's Christmas special, of course. Meet the Raisins, the first California Raisins band show. We get to talk about their show one day.
Oh my god.
Based off of the popularity of Meet the Raisins this year.
You mean the cartoon version?
Yeah. The non-claymated version of
Dear God.
The only liked because they're stop motion animated California Raisins. And Garfield's 10th birthday and Mickey's 60th birthday.
Oh. Nice.
This was also the year of the Brave Star film featuring Susan Blue.
Really?
As a voice.
Wait, Brave Star?
Yeah.
That's a big year. It's been,
good year for Susan Blue. I wanted to make sure I got her in all three
episodes that's great.
From 88.
Just a reminder to everybody, she is the mother in Friday the 13th Part 7, right?
New Blood.
Yeah.
She gets stabbed to death.
Yeah, if you've seen it, you remember her. He kills her with like a tree cutter.
Oh!
Mm-hmm. So that's wild because she did way more.
She's all over this year.
Good for you, Susan Blue.
So, yeah. Do you remember Braystar?
No, I never really watched that one. I think it's syndicated starting 87, I think.
So, it's on an alien planet, and he's a cop. Or, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, he's a sheriff of a cowboy town.
Okay.
But it's futuristic, so all the horses are robots.
Whoa. And that's what it was?
Yeah. And there's robots.
Don't they? Is that the show where instead of bullets, they shoot stars?
That could be.
I think they have the same cartoon.
I think they do. They got big funny guns. Yeah.
I just keep thinking of the Moo Mesa theme.
The Cowboys
of Moo Mesa. Brave the Mesa.
I think that was later.
Western Sky. That's a post Ninja Turtle show. Yeah. Which I can't believe. I guess Turtles started the year before this and didn't hit Saturday morning till what? 89 or 90? That's bizarre.
It would have been perfect.
They're all over the place.
They could have ripped Raggedy Ann out of here.
Slot them out. Nope, I feel like somebody just forgot they left that show on for like 5 years. They're like, but that's still on at 8?
Yeah, or they're like, kids aren't up at 8.
Are you showing all 13 or just one episode's in there on loop? Oh my god, change that thing. Put on Little Rascals or something. It doesn't matter.
Craptastic.
This was also the year we got the last half of the syndicated TV movies Hanna-Barbera did called Hanna-Barbera Superstar 10. Featuring Top Cat and the Beverly Hills Cats, Scooby-Doo and the Ghoul School, Scooby-Doo and the Reluctant Werewolf, Rockin' with Judy Jetson, Yogi Bear and the Invasion of the Space Bears, and The Good, the Bad, and the Huckleberry Hound.
Nice. It's a great year.
I always wondered why that wasn't a Quick Draw McGraw movie featuring Huckleberry Hound, because, well, I guess that's obvious. Oh, man. So what? So that's all in 1988. Cartoon funnery. What year do you want to go forward in time or back?
Oh, so we've covered every channel in that. Yeah,
that's 1988 Saturday morning.
Oh god.
Now we just have to pick the year for the next one. You want to roll a die or you just want to pick one?
Maybe we should roll a die. It's too much pressure, honestly.
You got one?
What kind of, surely a nerd like me has some dice.
You don't have a die?
Yeah, I'm just gonna, you know, I'll edit this down later, but let's just see online dice roll, right?
Yeah, we'll just, we'll subtract the first number and add the next number, and it should end up some weird place.
All right. So we need a what?
How about we just like get? Is there a random number generator? Uh-huh. We just needed two numbers.
Random number generator.
Minus six. So 87, 86, 85, 84, 83, 82. And then the next random number we'll add. Hopefully it's not six.
Was that like 87?
Do it again.
No. Look, I just need to find out how to generate a double-digit number.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well, it's got to be between 50 and...
Double. Surely we can do that, right? Like I said, I'll edit all those down later. Random two-digit number generator.
There you go.
Wow. Okay, can we put between...
Let's do between 1955 and 2010. Because that seems to be the meat of time.
All right, so here's what we're going to do, Adam. I can't set parameters, so I'm just going to hit it until we hit between those two numbers. Okay. Does that sound good?
Let's put a 19 in front of the two numbers.
All right, here's our first go. Are you ready?
Okay. Here's the random number generated for the next year. And go.
Wait. Okay. No. No. No.
They didn't do it in 1945.
What were our years again?
Let's do between 1955 and 2015.
2015?
2010 then.
Okay. 1955 and 2010.
Because they must have phased out by at least that date, I'm thinking.
Ooh, 1995.
All right. Next episode will be
The beginning of 1995. That'll be fun. So we have Fox Kids probably in play.
Is there Transformers?
I don't know what's on TV in 1995. I'm about to get a car. I'm not watching these.
I'm not watching like, this shit. I just graduated high school, so I'm still watching this.
I'm like oddly attracted to men. I don't have time. This would be great. I probably missed out. Hey, is X-Men on? I'll finally get to watch that cartoon.
Yeah.
This will be fun.
It's got to be right. So somewhere around there.
90s is a great time to revisit. So, yeah.
That was Saturday morning, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally right.
So, join us next time. We're going to look at 1995. We're going to go through, I think, 4 networks. So there'll be 4 episodes.
Yeah, but this time we're going to end it with the comparison.
Yeah, and the time slots. At the end of it, we'll compare all of the shows we've then watched and have a better way of nailing who won the time slot.
Yeah.
But until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Have a happy Sunday. Thanks a lot. This is Adam Fair. You can see me at Adam Fair Land on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. And this is Dusty Griffin. You can check me out at DustyIsCertifiable on Instagram and DustyGriffin.com.
Well done.
Good night, everybody.